We are the Atheist Nomads, bringing you history, science, politics, religion, and interviews with leaders in the atheist community. Not all those who wander are lost. Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. This is episode number 43. Later in the episode, we'll be joined by Rachel Nannen Brown to talk about creationism, evolution, paleontology.
And a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah. She's pretty cool.
Good interview.
Yeah.
I'm Dustin, and joining me as always is Wesley.
Hey, how there, neighbor. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. How about you?
You know what? I got a piece of cheesecake and a beer, odd combination, and it tastes fucking good. So I'm happy. Actually, a cider. Screw that.
Nah. All right. We have to start off with a retraction.
Uh-oh.
A few episodes ago, we reported on an article claiming that Jenny McCarthy's son did not have autism and that she was retracting her anti-vaccine position. And she tweeted on January 4th of 2014 a rebuttal to those all those articles that have been floating around. They are inaccurate. She's claiming that her son does still have autism, and she is still anti-vax.
Right. Okay.
So I am fully retracting the almost nice things I said about Jenny McCarthy. She is the epitome of all that is wrong with this world.
All right. Jenny McCarthy is still a nutter. Mm-hmm. All right. Got it.
Yes. Okay. So next up, hopefully we'll be able to get some audio from this when it happens, but Robert Ray, who we had on a couple months ago, he's the president of the Humanists of the North Puget Sound and a friend of the show, has been trying to get in to do an invocation with the Oak Harbor City Council. And Oak Harbor is up in northern parts of the Puget Sound. And this was because of, well, the fact that those invocations had been very, very largely Christian, and there hadn't been any humanists. So he'd been trying for a while to get in on that, and it's looking like he's scheduled for February.
Yeah, I mean, Robert's a celebrant, and so why not? You know, mm-hmm. Who better to do this?
Yeah. So congratulations, Robert. And with any luck, he'll be able to get some audio of it and get that to us. And we can play it on the show.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of fun. I don't think we've ever played a humanist invocation.
And if he does it nude, we wouldn't even know because, you know, it'll be audio. Just putting that out there, Rob. You could do it.
All right. And unless you've been under a rock, this has been blasted across virtually every blog and news outlet out there. A former Seventh-day Adventist pastor by the name of Ryan Bell, he left his employment with the Adventist Church last spring over his more progressive views than the SDA Church has. And that was even with being in the most liberal conference of the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
Hmm.
They parted ways, and he has decided to try out atheism for a year. This has gotten some kudos and a whole lot of negative.
From both sides.
Yes, from both sides. People thinking he's doing it wrong, thinking you can't just try out atheism.
From what I can tell, the dude is an atheist, but he's just never been openly atheist about it since he's come to that conclusion. That's my thought.
I would go with a little softer perspective on it. He is as legitimately agnostic as possible.
Okay.
Not only does he not know if there's a God or not, he doesn't know what he believes. And that is a very difficult position to stay in. I was there for quite a while, back right before I left the Adventist Church. And so I can relate to where he's at. He's just going about it in the opposite order of most people.
So you'd call him an honest agnostic.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, I would definitely like people to cut him a bit of slack while he tries this out. Nothing he's been trying has worked. His faith wasn't doing him any good. His religious beliefs weren't panning out. And so he's going to try something different. To do anything else would be insane.
Yeah, well.
And we've actually been working with him to get him on the show in a upcoming episode. And the hosting changes we've talked about recently, those are progressing. We have entered into a partnership with Archway Hosting. They will be sponsoring us with, well, free hosting. So each episode for the next quite a while will be brought to you by Archway. So, yeah, feel free to support them because they are helping support us. With that change, which will be going out over the next, next month, I'm going to be trying to make it as seamless as possible, but with
it's moving... a Band-Aid, man. Just rip it off.
Yeah, I'm going to be going for as seamless as possible, but with moving our new episode hosting to Libsyn, that's going to require changing the feed. And so for people that have subscribed through iTunes, that will be completely seamless. iTunes will update automatically, but that will mean if you've got iTunes, you may not be able to access the older episodes. So you'd have to go in and manually download those. For those of you using Android or just your computer and using some other service where you've manually entered in the RSS feed, you will need to update that at some point.
Is there a chance that you can do an RSS with the new information, like put out a little text feed?
Oh, yes. I will definitely be doing that.
All right.
One thing I'll be doing is for several episodes, I'll make sure that the old feed will still have the new episodes, even though they're going in through Libsyn. Because at that point, it's just a file. And so I'll be doing that for a while, but won't do it forever. The last episode that will be posted to that old feed will be a update now message. but I will be posting instructions as soon as I have the information available on how to update to the new feeds.
Cool.
And with all the new added information I will have at that time. So yeah, this will require some action at some point, but we're going to try to make it as painless as possible.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Now it's time for feedback. We got a message from Ryan.
Hi, this is Ryan from Massachusetts. First of all, I want to say I'm so glad that I found this podcast because I've been looking for a good atheist podcast for a long time since Atheist News and Chariots of Iron kind of went under. And it was great to have that honorary last episode. About Pope Francis, I think he was just been put in as Pope just so we can say all these, you know, quote-unquote crazy things that drive the other cardinals and the rest of the Vatican mad as a way to cover up everything that's been done by Benedict. It's their way of sweeping it under a feigning poverty rug. Pope Francis comes out, you know, not living in the papal palace, being nice to poor people, reaching out to atheists, saying atheists can go to heaven, and all that, and how much news has been going around about the molestation cover-ups. It's all just vanishing away because everyone can't get enough of this shiny new pope. So I just wanted to put out my two cents on the matter. And once again, I love the podcast. Guys, keep doing what you do. The tide is turning and things are getting better for equality in this whole country. So keep it up and have a good day.
All right, Ryan. Well, yeah, I definitely think that he's smokescreening a bit. From what I know, he was pretty, you know, when he was still, before he turned Pope, he was still kind of glitz and glam. But yeah, if you look at the pictures between him and Benedict when they're sitting in the Vatican, I mean, there's no more big giant gold throne. There's, you know, he's not wearing the big red slippers or anything. So yeah, he's making it look better. But yeah, kind of like you're saying, it's nothing's changed but the tone.
Yeah, Benedict was a very careful choice to have somebody who wouldn't last long that would maintain the status quo.
That motherfucker lasted way longer than he should have. I thought he was going to kick off like soon.
Yeah, it was very clear by their selection that they wanted to get a conservative pope as just a placeholder so that nothing would change over a short period of time, and nothing changed under him. The Catholic Church didn't get more conservative or more liberal. It just stayed on the same course it had been on. And when he resigned, I think the fact that that tactic wasn't working was taking a serious toll on him and was probably a big factor in his choice. And putting in Francis, who is a lot prettier to everybody else, so to say, It was very much a political move to try to take the Catholic Church in a different direction. What they'd been doing wasn't working. They were losing sway over the world in droves. Everybody was looking at the sex abuse scandal. The Catholic Church was on the decline, and going with as different as possible of a pope was a way to try to turn that around.
It's still just a pretty picture, though. Everything's still fucking rotten in Denmark.
They are still raping children, and they are still opposing women's rights, gay rights, and contraceptives.
Basically everything.
Yeah, the Catholic Church
that they
is,
always have.
It is still pure evil. It's just a little less evil, but not where it counts.
Oh, boy. All right.
Anyway, I'm glad you found us, and glad that another former Chariots of Iron Atheist news fan has found us.
Yeah, for sure.
If it hadn't been for those shows, ours wouldn't have ever started.
That's for damn sure.
Yeah. All right. If you've got feedback for us, you can email us at contact@atheistnomads.com, or you can call us and leave us a message at 541-203-0666.
This day in history, January 16th, 1970. You might have heard about Kurt Flood, big name back in the day. He was a 7-time Golden Glove winning center fielder. Holy shit, apparently that's a big deal. But he got a little fed up with shit. So check this out. Basically, he got traded from one team to another, never had a say in it. No players really ever had a say in it. And when he sued, he argued that this thing called the reserve clause violated antitrust laws and violated the 13th Amendment, which barred slavery and involuntary servitude. Holy shit. I mean, that's definitely one way to look at it.
Yeah.
Very accurate, it seems, too. But, Flood wasn't the first player to challenge it, but he was certainly the most prominent, and he even stood to lose the most. Yeah, I mean, his career was basically over when because of this. The first court that he brought this against, the district court judge rejected Flood's claim in August 1970, later went to the U.S. Supreme Court. And despite having support from players like Jackie Robinson, he still lost. And the part that bugs me is not a single active player at the time would testify on Flood's behalf. The court still ruled against him in a 5-3 decision in 1972. Unfortunately, Flood still lost. Major League Baseball agreed to federal arbitration of player salary demands in 1973, and later in 75, an arbitrator effectively threw out the reserve clause, paving the way for the free agency that baseball players and basically all sports now enjoy. So, you know, they can be a free agent if they want to and, you know, go to a different team and not be trapped someplace they don't want to be. So, hooray for not being a slave to your baseball team. Fuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, they made it, brought it to the point where now you actually, you know, unless you're on contract, you can be a free agent. But
makes
you
sense.
Have to choose to go into contract.
This day in history, 1982, Britain and the Vatican restore full diplomatic ties after 400 years. Holy shit. Yeah, so most of this, from what I can tell, stems, or at least starts from, Henry VIII getting a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Which basically caused a kind of a schism in the religious world, didn't it?
Well, on some history on that, Henry had already had several marriages ended. He needed a heir, and he'd marry a woman, and if she didn't get pregnant within a couple of years, he'd go to the Pope and get a annulment.
Hmm.
And he'd then, at least didn't have a male son. He'd get an annulment and then marry somebody else. And then eventually the Pope said, no more. And that's when he was like, all right, fine. We'll have our own church.
No, I'll be damned.
Yeah.
Good to know. Yeah, well, there you go. So that, yeah, that ended in 1982, and good old John Paul, you know, kindly looking man that he was, got some credit for bringing relations back together. It was actually like in 1984, there was a United States got their full diplomatic ties back to the Vatican after about 30 years, I think it was. U.S. wouldn't pay for like housing and stuff like that, so they basically just didn't have a post.
Now, personally, I think it's absurd for a church to be treated as a state.
A nation state, yeah.
Yeah, they've got their little bit of sovereign territory, but it's a church.
Yeah, that's all at the will of Italy. Italy yeah. can take that Italy should take that shit back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all right, your lease is up.
Yeah, giving bishops and cardinals ambassadorial rank is insane. And giving a church embassy land is, well, again, insane.
Yeah, pretty much. You do it for one, do it for all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And let's go with none.
Yeah, even better, even better. Unless Baphomet and the Spaghetti Monster and all of them get one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the good parties would be at Baphomet's. All right. This day in history, 1988. Jimmy the Greek is fired by CBS. So, I don't know. You may or may not have heard about this dude. He was a well-publicized sports commentator and critic and such on TV. And, yeah, he said some things that weren't very nice. This guy had an interview on, as I recall, it was actually Martin Luther King Jr.'s real birthday, the 16th. And during that interview, they were talking about black people in sports, and he let out this thing where he's talking about the slave owner would breed his big black to his big woman so that he could have a big black kid, you see.
So essentially saying that slave owners had practiced eugenics essentially to produce these massive, highly strong people that would be perfect for athletics.
Right. And he even kind of turned the stereotype around, saying that the only chance whites have to stay competitive with blacks is through practice and hard work. Yeah, holy shit. This gentleman was subsequently fired quick, fast, and in a hurry. Interestingly, you have people like Bill Cosby and then presidential candidate Jesse Jackson saying that the man had apologized and basically, you know, give him another chance. The Greek was out and he pretty much faded really quick after that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, another one bites dust.
That was some pretty crazy,
wow,
non-historically valid bullshit.
I mean, that's like not that long ago, in 1988.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Oh, boy. Anyways, okay. That's what I got.
Alrighty.
That's really sad.
Time for science and technology.
Okay.
First off, we've got dolphins getting high. That's right. A BBC documentary used a mechanical tuna to follow around dolphins and record them so that their behavior wouldn't really be all that affected. And what they found is several adolescent male bottlenose dolphins catching a pufferfish, which is poisonous, chewing on it for a little bit and then passing it on to somebody else. And then acting pretty weird. They would just hang around with the nose to the surface as if they were fascinated by their own reflection.
Okay, that's kind of cool. It's like I used to always hear about people licking poisonous frogs for the same reason.
Of course, this isn't the first time that animals, you know, non-human animals have been found trying to enjoy mind-altering substances. Moose and I believe deer as well have been found getting drunk, eating fermented apples.
Hmm. We used to have, like, robins that would eat the berries from our holly tree mm-hmm. and fly into our windows. So I always kind of thought those got them drunk also.
Yeah. Wouldn't be surprising. There's a lot of birds that are quite intelligent, and you know, if moose and deer are doing it, it doesn't require a whole lot of intelligence to figure out that one makes me feel funny.
Yeah, poor things.
Dolphins get trying to get a buzz. That totally makes sense. They are very smart.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah. A mood stabilizing drug has been discovered to have some unexpected results. In particular, they're finding evidence that it restores some of the childlike plasticity of the brain and has allowed people to develop perfect pitch, which is something that you normally would have to develop by about 3 years of age, and also make it much easier to pick up a second language.
Hmm.
And so the ability to reopen that plasticity is, well, pretty amazing.
Yeah, fucking A.
Yeah. To test out this plasticity, the way they did it was during the second week of being on this drug, the 24 men on the study that had little or no musical training either got the valproate or a placebo, and this went on for a total of 15 days. But in the second week, they watched a 10-minute training video that taught them to associate 6 notes over 3 octaves with 6 arbitrary names. They use names like Sarah and David. And then, at the final day of this trial, they heard 18 different notes and had to give them the name that went with that note. And the men who had taken the valproate identified 5.09 of the notes correctly. And the placebo group got on average 3.5 notes right, which is no better than chance.
Okay, well, more than a statistical significant amount. Mm-hmm.
Granted, the group size was pretty small, but still, yeah, it is a amount of statistical significance.
So enough to hopefully go in for larger groups later.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
And with any luck, this may have some interesting results. Now, of course, the researchers are being cautious because there is a good reason for why that plasticity ends up kind of slowing down, and that's because of how dangerous it could be to have your brain rewiring itself extensively for your entire life. And yeah, they would have been a little worried about testing this on humans if it hadn't been for the fact that it had already been used for quite a while for mood disorders and epilepsy.
Hmm.
And so it's a limited increase in plasticity, not going wide open back to like a 3-year-old mind.
Hmm. I wonder if this would have any effect on people that have like Lou Gehrig's or anything like that, or Alzheimer's.
Not likely, because those issues are degeneration of the brain.
Well, if you could rewire.
You could potentially, yeah, it could have some effects, but they are, you know, what they're finding with this is it's very limited in how much it does, and I think mm-hmm. it'd be doubtful that it would have increased enough plasticity to be able to make up for the loss of brain function.
Hmm.
Maybe after a stroke, this could be pretty helpful.
Yeah.
Because it's not continual degradation of the brain. It's just that one-time issue that screwed up something. And, you know, rewiring can take place after a stroke. If you could allow for a little bit of extra, you could definitely improve the amount of recovery. So that would be interesting to see. Fibromyalgia, for a while, has been kind of viewed as being psychosomatic. A lot of researchers were definitely leaning that direction because they couldn't pin down a cause. You've got this set of symptoms, but they didn't know what was causing it. A new study has found an actual cause for it. This will improve with being able to make better diagnosis, and it also helps explain the variety of symptoms and the number of symptoms and the rate of effect that this disorder can have. All right, what they're finding is that it's being caused by changes in our core body temperature. And so our major organs and muscles all require constant temperature, roughly at about 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit. And sufferers of fibromyalgia can't maintain a steady temperature. And so if you lose too much heat or you gain too much heat, the hypothalamus has a hard time trying to balance that out. And the blood flow ends up being disrupted as it tries to balance that out. And so muscles and organ function end up not working as well.
So basically it's a disruption of our body's own homeostasis. All right. Wow. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Well, let's hope that that's actually what is causing this and that, you know, maybe we can just, you know, put on a sweater or, you know, a wife beater or something and, you know, feel better.
Yeah. or develop something a little more robust to try to control it, chemically. Once you know what's causing something, there's usually ways to try to trick the body into doing what you want it to.
Well, you know, for all those hippy-dippy liberals out there, you know, that don't want to have injections or...
Right, they just try to treat it by cutting out nightshades or gluten.
Oh, God.
Or walking barefoot in the forest.
Not gluten. Please, not gluten. Fuck.
All right, so after a word from our sponsor, Archway Hosting, we'll move on to politics and religion.
All right.
Do you have an idea for a website but don't know how to get started? Are you tired of expensive hosting draining your budget dry? Archway Hosting can help. Our fully functional hosting service starts at $20 per year. That includes hosting, databases, email, and much more. We also do web design and web development. Check us out at archwayhosting.com. That's ARCHWAY hosting.com.
First off, Utah, like we last reported, Utah was trying to get a stay on the ruling that legalized same-sex marriage in that state. And the district judge and the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals both refused to stay that ruling. They put in an emergency appeal to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court did grant a stay. So same-sex marriages in Utah have been put on hold. Unfortunately, at the same time, the state of Utah decided that they will not be recognizing these marriages that have taken place. And so those are all up in complete turmoil.
Dick move, Utah.
Especially now that the federal government is recognizing same-sex marriages. If they're not valid in the state in which they're performed, I don't know how the feds will be reacting.
They were at the time.
And so, anyway, this is, the 10th Circuit has agreed to doing, kind of rushing to the appeal. So they are going to try to rule on it quickly. And as far as the, Supreme Court, ruling on the stay, it was unsigned. It was one paragraph long and it didn't spell out any reasoning or indicate who, agreed with or disagreed with issuing a stay. It was all very quiet. Looking at the way they handled last year's cases, it definitely appears like the Supreme Court, they're wanting to take a cautious, slow approach on this. It really seems like they're wanting to do a wait and see with same-sex marriage. And so they're not wanting to say what they're going to do because I think realistically they don't know how they're going to rule on this.
It's getting to that tipping point. It's about time that they actually fucking put their foot down.
Well, especially since we just had another federal judge today reject Oklahoma's same-sex marriage ban. This ruling's also in the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, so it is quite likely that the 10th Circuit will combine those two cases for their ruling in the appeal. But this case was stayed by the judge, pending appeal. And, this is going to be really interesting because if the 10th Circuit's having to handle two cases, then their ruling would definitely seem to end up having to take precedence in all states across their circuit. And it would seem to greatly increase the likelihood, especially if it's going to be a district-wide ruling, for the Supreme Court to have to take it up and make a nationwide ruling. This is coming.
And soon, man. Yeah. And soon. About time.
Now we just need a case in another circuit court to start moving through the process quickly. So that way the Supreme Court will have no choice but to make a nationwide ruling.
Fucking A. All right.
Next we have a case out of Texas where a pregnant woman is suspected to have had a blood clot go to her lungs, cut off her oxygen supply, and by the time she got to the hospital, or shortly after getting to the hospital, she was pronounced brain dead. Because she's in Texas, they have a law that says that if a woman is pregnant, then her advance directives, her wishes, the family's wishes, those are all null and void, and she must be kept on life support. Her advance directives were to not be kept alive on life support. Having spent 3 days in a hospital room with a loved one who was brain dead and on life support, I can definitely say that what this family has been put through over the last 2 months is insanely brutal. And also the baby is very likely to have suffered the same ill effects from that lack of oxygen and is probably also brain dead or otherwise not developing properly. They can make a better decide how to handle it under the Texas law after they know whether or not the fetus will survive. But it doesn't seem very likely that a fetal development could continue without brain or even brain stem activity.
Fuck.
And the real kicker in this case, the family wants her taken off of life support. She would have wanted to be taken off of life support. And guess who gets stuck with the bill?
I'm hoping not the family.
It's the family.
Motherfucker.
So they're suing the state of Texas over this.
Yeah.
Actually, I think it's the hospital and the state because, yeah, she wouldn't have wanted this and they shouldn't have to pay for it.
God damn.
You know, and as I recall, the amount of care required to keep a heartbeat and, well, just to keep a heartbeat going, you know, when brain dead, you don't have anything trying to control those functions. So you've got a ventilator to keep the lungs going and it's like 2 or 3 drug cocktail just to keep the heart beating. And
really?
Yeah, and those drugs, they help stimulate heart beating and they also, they cause the blood vessels to constrict to create a blood pressure.
I was thinking that they could do like a pacemaker kind of thing.
Nope.
Damn.
Without brainstem activity, you don't have blood pressure.
Okay.
Those veins, they go soft. They aren't constricting. So, it's drugs and machines that cause the appearance of life on the monitors, but those are expensive.
Fucking A, I'm sure.
I think my nephew's 3 days ran somewhere in the ballpark of $30,000.
Motherfucker.
Yeah.
Guessing that's not even including the hospital room or bed or whatever.
Including the hospital room and bed.
Okay.
That degree of life support, at least in his case, it was all in the ICU. He had a nurse assigned to him full time and all of those drugs.
Crazy.
Yeah. Very much. Very, very much crazy.
I wouldn't wish that on any fucking family.
All right. Next up, we have a library in Beirut, Lebanon that was home to 78,000 books. These books, this library had basically started out as a priest's private collection, and he continued to amass more and more books. Many of these were books about Islam, and many of them were books that had very, very few extant copies.
Mm.
This was a very unique collection, and terrorists burned it down.
Of course.
Their complaint was that some of the books were anti-Islam.
Of course. Oh, goodness.
And, of course, it was anti-Islam. It was run by a Christian priest. Well, actually, many of those books were about and pro-Islam.
Yeah, but just like any other religion, only one book matters. Motherfuckers.
It's also suspected that that library did include Qurans. Yeah, anyway, they burned it. 78,000 books gone.
I believe this is actually a quote from that guy. I'm not Muslim, but I'm more Muslim than the lunatics who torched that library and are so... And so are most of the people of Tripoli that many Lebanese love to dismiss so easily.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck. Okay, all that shit aside, fuck the priest part. I don't care. A book lover is a book lover. And if he's trying to save some history, especially books that are almost irreplaceable, well, good on him. But
yeah,
hopefully some of that's recoverable, maybe.
From the pictures, Man. It really doesn't look like it. Books burn quite easily.
Yeah.
You'd have a few fragments left behind.
All right, what we got next?
The results of the 2013 New Zealand census shows that Christianity is continuing to decline. Now down to 47%.
Oh my God, they're not a majority.
No longer a majority. If you graph it out... it projects that it will decline to just a little bit above 20% by 2030 and then continue to decline.
Man, just a few years back in 1990, it was up almost at 70%.
Mm-hmm. It's dropping fast.
Fucking A, like flies.
Now, one issue with these numbers is that census allows people to check off more than one group. And so there would have been people that could have marked off multiple sects of Christian or just some kind of general Christian and a specific denomination. And so it is possible that Christianity in New Zealand could actually be as low as 41.9%.
Damn, son.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it good is... on him.
Yeah, I also saw an interesting number recently. I don't have the article, fortunately, but Norway, they're now saying, is down to 2% for church attendance.
Yeah. I'm sure the amount of people that say that they're Christian is a decent piece higher.
Mm-hmm.
But, 2%, goodness.
Yeah, well, heck, from back when I was in the seminary, the numbers on church attendance in the U.S. was sitting down around 20% each week.
Wow.
Yeah.
Think about how many nice days sleeping in or football games or walks in the park or, you know, helping others that are just missed because you're sitting in really fucking uncomfortable chairs.
Yeah. And now we've got an update on the Satanist monument that's being proposed for the Oklahoma State Capitol to go up next to the Ten Commandments. Formal application has now been submitted, and it includes a artist's rendering of the monument, which shows Baphomet, a goat-headed figure for Satan that has horns, wings, and a long beard, sitting in a chair with a pentagram over his head and children around him that's at the perfect height for children to be able to sit on his lap.
Hey, I like it. I'm in favor.
Other requests have been put in, including, from Hindus, an animal rights group, and the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Yeah, I'd let all of them but PETA. Yeah.
The, response from, Oklahoma has been to put a moratorium on any new requests. Their justification for this is there is a pending lawsuit over the constitutionality of the Ten Commandments monument. And so until that gets decided, it gets to be the only one there.
Of course. That's when David Silverman and the American Atheist came in.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard about that one?
Oh, yeah.
They're suing the state now.
Mm-hmm.
And they use the Ten Commandments as part of their case against the state.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy.
Now, sticking with the whole Satanist track on this, Fox News in their reporting mistakenly said that it was an atheist group trying to put up a monument to Satan.
Nah.
And then corrected that on Facebook, and or not on Facebook, on Twitter and on the air that, no, it's a Satanist group.
Hmm.
You've got State Representative Don Arms saying, I think you've got to remember where you are. This is Oklahoma, the middle of the heartland. I think we need to be tolerant of people who think different than us, but this is Oklahoma, and that's not going to fly here. So you've got to be tolerant, but not here.
Well, I mean, it's a Christian state, obviously.
Another state legislator, Representative Earl Sears, called this an insult to the good people of the state. And he also said that, and I quote, I do not see Satanism as a religion, and they have no place at the state capitol.
Well, you know what? If you didn't have Christianity, there would be no Satanists.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the other side of the coin.
And a quote from the Satanic Temple website says that they seek to separate religion from superstition by acknowledging religious belief as a metaphorical framework with which we construct a narrative context for our goals and works. Satan stands as the ultimate icon for the selfless revolt against tyranny, free and rational inquiry, and the responsible pursuit of happiness. And that really makes me think this monument needs to go up. And finally, we have Bill Nye the Science Guy being scheduled to debate Ken Ham at the Creation Museum on February 4.
I love the guy, but I don't see this as being a good thing in any way.
I'm both pro and against it. You've got the, on the one hand, Ken Ham is going to try to turn it as much as possible, any way he can, to being a win for him. Either he is just going to just try to poke fun at evolutionary theory, the way creationists tend to do, and try to make people view evolution as silly and just reinforce it in their minds, or he's going to legitimately lose and then try to claim some kind of persecution thing and get more money out of it. Mm. On the other hand, this is a chance for Bill Nye to bring the evidence to the heart of the creationist world.
I'm very glad that Bill is doing this and not a biologist or some other science teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Bill's an engineer and a science communicator, and I think that makes a great difference.
And he's really good at speaking to common people.
Oh, definitely.
Heck, he can dumb it down and communicate it to children.
Sure.
He'll only have to dumb it down a little bit more to get to creationists.
this is still being held at the Creation Museum. You know what? Don't get me wrong. I think that Bill will change a couple of people's minds in the audience, or at least put enough, you know, rocks in the gears of their mind to, like, you know, make them start questioning. But, you know, I still got a feeling that Ham's just going to throw out the standard gish gallop, throw out a whole bunch of questions that take way too long to disprove. And, you know, all these people are still coming at creationism from a very, very emotional place.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't really combat emotion with logic very well. Most of these people are going to think that Ham won, even if he gets his ass handed to him.
Well, as a kid, I watched Bill Nye the Science Guy every day after school.
I did too, but, you know, you gotta admit, you're kind of odd.
Let me continue.
All right.
And every time he would say millions or billions of years, or evolve, or evolution, I would just kind of tune that part out. And then I would pray for him.
Oh.
I would pray that God would save Bill from Satan's delusions, and yeah.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, that's what he's up against.
Yeah.
He's up against people that will either hate him or feel sorry for him.
I mean, he's got a great reputation. I can't really think of anybody except for maybe a few weirdos that don't fucking love Bill Nye. I mean, he's just all around awesome. But I get the idea where, like, Dawkins, he says he won't debate anybody anymore that, you know, of the creationist stripe. And I totally get that. And yes, I think Bill can reach more people. It doesn't matter what the outcome is. It's just not going to be received well in religious circles.
Here's where I think it's going to do the most good.
Mm.
This is going to get a lot of media attention.
Sure.
The diehard creationists can't be reached. So it's irrelevant. Those who understand evolution and accept evolution, they're going to see right through Ken Ham. So it's not going to have any effect on them. But there is that segment of the population that isn't all that sure, and he has a chance to reach them.
Well, as much as I would love to rope off the creationists in some little state like Louisiana or something, which I'm sure the vast majority are already there. Hi, Louisiana. Yeah, I mean, it's just a whole bunch of preaching to the choir, no matter which side you're on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, maybe, you know, people kind of like Ryan from earlier, Ryan Bell, could help. That could actually help.
People like him, or like where he was recently, and people in their teens and 20s that have really only heard creationism. They've never really gotten a chance to hear about evolution. This may be their chance to hear when they're beginning to question things that, oh yeah, there is an alternative, and wow, it makes sense. But we'll talk about this more in the interview.
All right.
Speaking of which, it's time for the interview.
Oh, hey.
You've got decisions. This versus that will help you make them. This versus that is an all-new six-hour series that uses science to investigate the world within arm's reach. For instance, what's the fastest way to navigate through highway traffic? Just stay in your lane and creep along, weave in and out of cars, taking advantage of every opening, or is it faster to take surface streets? This versus that will reveal the answer to that question and dozens more. This versus that is the web's number one choice for science enthusiasts, skeptics, and critical thinkers. Go to thisversusthatshow.com. Again, thisversusthatshow.com. This versus that. No bias, no bullshit, just science, fact, and funny.
Use offer code NOMADS when checking out to save 25% off your purchase at thisversusthatshow.com. That offer code, once again, is NOMADS.
Joining us now is Rachel Nannen Brown. She is the co-host and evolution/science expert on the Dogma Debate podcast, and she's also a research assistant at the Arlington Archosaur dig site. Rachel, welcome to Atheist Nomads.
Thank you for having me.
Great.
I'm very excited. I don't get to go on a lot of podcasts. David keeps me all to himself, so.
Oh.
They don't let you out and see the light very often.
No, no, not at all. Definitely not.
So, yeah, Dogma Debate. You say that you're kind of like their creationism specialist, too, aren't you?
Yes.
Why should we care?
Why should we care about creationism? What is creationism? Well, I got passionate about it early on in my college career, and I realized my first passionate moment was because I was raised to actually think that people don't really believe the Bible is literal, in that Noah's Ark happened, that animals were pooped into existence into a garden, that man is better than all animals. My parents actually told me that people don't believe that anymore. Because I heard those Bible stories at Sunday school, and even though my parents were actually atheists, we went to church for social stuff. And so I heard these stories, and I'm like, they took two of each animal on a boat, and they flooded everyone else, and then they all spread back out again. Mom's like, no one really believes that anymore. And so I thought that was the way the world was. And then I was in almost my 20s, and I was involved with someone who actually was a creationist, and I didn't realize what that meant. And I'm not somebody that's against like interfaith relationships. If you can make it work, great. We avoided the subjects of evolution, of atheism, because I was an atheist. And, after about 2 years, we got into the conversations, and I realized that an adult male who was very intelligent was actually arguing with me about the fact that animals were all made around 6,000 years ago in a garden, that dinosaurs were made there, that their teeth were, though sharp, were made for eating vegetables in the garden until sin entered the world or something, and that we're better than everything else, that Adam is above Eve, all of this stuff. And I'm like, but people don't really believe this stuff. I thought, wow, really intelligent, good people that you can be friends with, that's your family, can't have these thoughts. It's not just like a lot of atheists I speak to, that they're angry and their immediate reaction is, well, they're just dumb. They're just stupid. You know, they think this because they have no intelligence. They won't get away with it. It's nothing to worry about. It's just a bunch of dumb people, you know, in a small town. It's not going to affect anybody. And I have a completely different view of it because I know that creationism does not equal that person's stupid. Creationism is so powerful because not only do people get taught this from childhood, especially in their Christianities, Baptist is a good one around Texas.
That's me.
Yeah. So a lot of kids are raised to, understand the word kinds as a way to describe an animal, a cat kind, a dog kind. And they, you know, we think that animals went on the ark. You can find such animals of ark animals. It's totally normal. And whenever you are raised with something and you don't like to let it go when you're an adult, that's why there's actually a window. It's the 414 gap. I think that's what, or 414 window, not the gap. It's the opposite. And between 4 and 14, that's where a lot of higher up Christian groups are actually trying to practically advertise because they know that this window is where you will almost mind control them for life. If you get them to accept it and believe it at a young age, it will be difficult to let go as an adult. And so a lot of smart people were taught these things. We're not taught evolution. I wasn't, practically. I had to learn everything myself. And I see that normal people in society will literally think this stuff. And then we care about it. Because creationism is completely the opposite of what science tells us happened. It is the complete opposite of how we evolved. I mean, you go to a chiropractor, or you go to a dentist to get your wisdom teeth out, or you go even just to get your immune system checked if you're allergic to things. All of those things are completely based on evolutionary science. Your back hurts, you get back problems, you get a sciatica because of the fact that we evolved from quadrupeds. And creationism says that, well, if we came from monkeys, why are monkeys still here? And that's the end of the, you know, discussion usually with them. And wisdom teeth, I think someone told me that we have problems with our wisdom teeth because of sin or something.
Yeah, we got smaller.
And I'm like, if you look at the evolution of primates, it shows exactly in order what happened from having a bigger jaw, a longer jaw, to having a smaller jaw tucked under our face. So our wisdom teeth are caught at the back of the jaw, and it causes infection. And creationism's no, it's probably because of sin. And no matter what, everything that they have to say is not only completely the opposite of what science says, I have never seen an actual statement from them that's not a lie. That is not, is pretty much a straw man. And they'll take this stuff and they'll apply it as a 45-year-old, a 50-year-old, or they'll vote for state boards of education for them to remove evolution studies from textbooks. Because they think that evolution has no evidence, just a bunch of silly people that think we come from monkeys, and that creationism belongs in the books because, you know, we need to teach all sides. And that is so awful because evolution is literally the foundation of all biological sciences. If you take out the foundation, and you literally don't understand the rest of the actual tree. And that's what creationism is doing. It's trying to take out what caused every piece of the puzzle of biological science away and then just say God did it. And they are really, really, really good at it. They're really good at it, surprisingly.
Yeah.
And,
no, I was a creationist until I was 23.
And how old are you now?
29.
How'd you get out?
I was in the Seventh Avenue Theological Seminary. And one of the classes we had was called Issues and Origins. They basically presented a watered-down 1970s version of evolutionary theory and tried to poke holes in it.
Mm-hmm.
And going through the class, I kept on seeing that, okay, all of these creationist arguments against it don't really account for anything. There was a couple spots, like with the geologic column, where, okay, you've got a singular spot in the world where you compressed 0.5% of the geologic column by a little bit. That doesn't really do anything. And so I got to the end of it and was like, okay, so science has a consistent, logical, evidence-based viewpoint, and the alternative is, well, bullshit.
Yeah, the alternative is emotion.
Yeah.
And fear, because if I feel like a lot of people, creationists at least, when I talk to them one-on-one and they're not as defensive, and even though they're not really registering what I'm trying to give them information-wise about evolution, the evidences, et cetera, I feel like what is causing them to just almost autopilot and just watch my mouth talk and not really listen is the fact that they know sometimes when they do listen, it's starting to make sense. Something I said makes sense, or I called out, actually, this is, you know, a quote mine, that scientist didn't really say that, or this is actually a lie, or this is from the 1920s, or this has been disproven. And they'll hear these little tidbits of showing them what they're really doing, of the fact they're lying, and they've been using the same arguments since, yeah, like the 1970s. Mm-hmm. They literally have not revised them. And they'll hear that. And I think that it startles them, because no matter what, we're a very, very intelligent species. Though people think, you know, everyone's really, really dumb on this planet, other than a couple people, I think women were born with the potential to be very intelligent. And I think they hear stuff that makes sense, and it scares them, because they realize if those things make sense, that's a domino effect. So evolution's true. So what about the garden? What about Jesus? What about God? What about purpose and meaning and love and grandma and the afterlife? And then why am I here? There's nothing.
Yeah. There was actually one point where the professor, this is towards the end of the semester, he was concerned that many of us would try to adopt some kind of theistic evolutionary viewpoint. And to try to make sure we wouldn't, he went through like a 14-step argument as to how you cannot have salvation if there's evolution.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
That was actually the most logical thing in the class.
Yeah, that's absolutely that's very logical, because, I mean, you can see these, it's almost like transitional forms of people, of Christians, of what they accept to be real and then what they then think is Christianity. So we have all these guests on that come in and we have to evaluate them. We have to figure out what kind of Christian they are. Do they accept evolution? Do they accept like old earth evolution? Are they creationists? Do they think, you know, sin came from this? Do they believe that we need Jesus, you know, for salvation, or we all go to hell? And so we have to evaluate them, because everyone's different, because everyone finds what they think is, it makes them feel okay because they've accepted it. And so I think there's these forms between creationist and a Christian that accepts evolution 100%.
And then kinds, the atheist. Perhaps.
There's forms of, I accept evolution, but only microevolution. And then there's like, I think evolution's true, but God guided it. No, I think evolution's true, but I think that God still gave us a purpose and he created the universe, or he started evolution and then poofed humans into existence in a garden in the middle of it. There's forms.
Usually seems that the more watered down their religion is of whatever sort, the more able they're able to accept science.
Yes, yes. And that's the problem with a lot of the Texas stuff is
it's Baptists, not watered down.
Baptists and Catholics around here, like it is very difficult, and especially, you know, evangelical. This new movement of mega churches and hardcore, you know, creationism. It's not watered down, and it's very high strung. I thought I would get tired of the same arguments over, you know, the 6 years I've been doing this, but I actually have become more sympathetic to them over time, because I realize that the people that are telling this to me, you know, at the dinner table, or a friend of, well, you know, what about the bacterial flagellum?
Oh,
and
no.
That makes me angry, because I realize we've already discussed this. There's a court case, read Kim Miller's book, and all of this stuff happens in my brain. I'm like, wait a minute. This person had to find this information out from someone else. They probably went to Answers in Genesis. They had a youth pastor. They had someone else who was an authority on it tell them this. So I feel sympathy for the normal people that are like, but these people say that the geological column shows Noah's flood. And I'm not mad at them. I'm mad at the people that are still spewing this nonsense, because normal people that have a, you know, 9-to-5 job don't know any better. They don't know about the quote mining. They don't know about the lies or about the science. And
they go to church. They have their pastor read off one little psalm or some little segment, and mm-hmm. that's their Bible for the week. They don't go in and read it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They don't go in for deep meaning in their Bible.
Yeah. And they feel like they should have an opinion on evolution because it's a big topic, but all they have as a source on their side, which they feel like their only option on their side, it would be, you know, a biblical one. Mm-hmm. All they have is answers in Genesis, and I feel very bad for them. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I then go, you fell for that trap. You don't know any better. I'm sorry. Let me show you why this is wrong, where they're lying to you, and expose them to you, and not just yell at that person for being stupid and nice. You know, and make them feel bad. I don't like that. It's not their fault. They don't know any better. Now, if they know any better, like freaking Eric Hovind, then yeah, I don't like to deal with that.
The son of the asshole.
He lies. I've watched his videos. He is absolute freaking. He twists it. So have y'all seen that video of him doing the tour, the Natural History Museum?
The one big video of Eric's that I've seen is, say what you want to about him and Thunderfoot, but I've seen those two go back and forth, and Eric's just an asshole going with circular logic.
Yeah, he tries to cover both ends. He either discusses creationism, and if he can get away with it with the person that, you know, he's talking to, because they don't know anything. They're just going, oh, really? Wow. Saturn's rings prove God's existence? That's amazing. And if someone goes, what? That makes no sense. What do you mean? He'll backtrack to like apologetics. He'll be like, well, how do you know anything? Well, I know all because God, you know, is in my brain and not yours. He'll always backtrack if you actually know about evolution. And he walked into that museum with his friend talking so much smack. And his friend was worse than he was. His friend, his one comment I remember and made me almost pass out was that I had to stop the video, and I went, wait, excuse me? I'd never heard this. He walked up to a fossil. I think his name was Daniel, his friend. He's recording him. And he went, you know, this is an ichthyosaur. And it was buried while giving birth. So, and, you know, ichthyosaurs it's an ancient reptilian, pretty much during the dinosaurs, a little bit later. Not around anymore. So it's dead. And we have it fossilized while giving birth. And so I'm like, what is he going to say about this? And he went, now think about this, guys. How did that ichthyosaur fossilize while giving birth so quickly if fossilization takes millions of years? He's literally saying, since that birth should have taken only a couple minutes, and evolution says that fossils need millions of years, that ichthyosaur should not have fossilized while giving birth, which means that the flood buried it.
Well, therefore, so, God just put fossils in the ground for us.
Absolutely. So anything that gets fossilized while doing anything at all, sleeping, doesn't matter, because that action is a lot shorter time period than millions of years. So unless they give birth for millions of years, then evolution is wrong.
God snapping his finger. His finger makes much more sense, of course.
Yeah, well, yeah. He's like, well, what could happen? The flood, guys, it got buried. Think about it. And he just walks away from the display as if he actually said something. And I think it's like 15 minutes of that. It was mind blowing. And it's just lies. Complete lies. He's not dumb. He's just lying. And that's what's sad. Someday, maybe I'll talk to him. Probably not, though. I'll let Ra do it.
There's some people that you know just don't know any better. And then there's some people who are just fucking assholes and, outright lie.
Yep. I think most people don't know any better. And because there's a lot of information out there, and they are good at, you know, making up stuff, and they are good at making us silly because we think that a frog turned into a human. Or as that creationist, one of my favorite was, he had a slideshow and he said, this is what evolutionists think. And it was a picture of a cornstalk growing a blue whale. It's like, how would the blue whale then get to water? It couldn't detach itself from the stalk. And the evolution person was just sitting there with his mouth open. I mean, are you serious? A blue whale growing out of a stalk of corn? Completely ridiculous. But then people that don't know better go, wow, that is dumb. I can't believe those evolutionists think that.
I mean, that's much more possible for like a blue waffle, but not a blue whale.
So their latest is a straw whale.
What?
A straw whale argument instead of a straw man?
Yes.
Oh, I say what you did there.
Whatever. They'll never stop making straw mans. They literally can't do it.
Yeah.
And if they do, that means they've lost and they're probably becoming atheists because then they realize they've been lying this whole time or been lied to.
Hitchens was always famous for saying that their arguments by definition are very old. They just don't have anything new.
Yeah, yeah. Creationism is atrocious when it comes to that. I mean, everyone I've been asked in the past probably 2 years is automatically linked to either Ken Ham or the Hovens. And it's usually the 1970s, 80s, or 90s. And there's always an immediate reaction from the scientific community going, this is not right. Here's the actual answer. Would you like to, have a rebuttal, Mr. Ken Ham? No. He'll just wait 2 months and then regurgitate the same question.
Yeah.
And then 40 years later.
Just like the fucking banana man saying the same shit over and over. So,
yeah.
You've said Ken Ham a couple times now. I wanted to talk about him and Bill Nye. So, yeah, what's your thoughts about this talk they're going to have?
I have no problem with it, but I was talking to Aaron Raw about it, and I know that a lot of, especially professional people that work in evolution, they work at the labs, they actually write the papers, they don't like to debate creationists because... Not because of what Christians say, because they're scared or they know they don't have the evidence or whatever, and they just don't reply because they don't either think it's worth their time, because it's not. It's completely a waste of time. But mostly it's you don't want to give the public this image that they're actually equal, that this is actually an open question that is still being discussed, because people would now see this as two debaters with two ideas and which one's right? We don't know. I mean, you could decide, but that's not the way it is. And so a lot of professional scientists work so deeply with evolution and they know it so well that it's almost insulting to the theory, to all of the work that we've done as a community, to go to a place with a creationist and say, we're on equal footing. You're just spouting bullshit. We have thousands of papers behind us. But yeah, sure. We're equal. So you go first. And it's a lot of evolutionists don't like to do that. And I'm not particularly one of them because I don't want to defend the non-equal footing thing. I like to get as much exposure to public people when they're listening to the actual evidences and the actual answers. So even if the creationist is on equal footing or whatever, people are listening to what I'm saying. And some people will Google stuff that I said. And it's worth it for me to do that kind of stuff. So I think that Bill Nye, he's such a person for promoting, science knowledge in the public for general knowledge.
Well, he's a science communicator. He's not a scientist. Exactly. He's an engineer by trade.
Yeah. And he's, and it's like whenever, he's studied so much science from the beginnings of being Bill Nye, the science guy. He's learned so much about all of these fields that he's able to probably outteach a lot of high school and possibly college, professors on certain subjects because he's had a lot of time. And I think that if there is someone to go talk to Ken Ham, because Ken Ham, wants a specific person. He wants to set up this perfect little scenario in which he wants a PhD. And they want someone who studies evolution, but does not know the creationist arguments. And that will make them look foolish. And the Hovind does the same thing. And I think, I feel like it's foolish for Ken Ham to accept this. I think Bill Nye's,
Well, Ken Ham's the one who put it out.
Yeah, I know. I think I don't understand why he did it. Like, I know he accepts debates every once in a while, but he usually does it in his favor. Because the creationists have to do it in their favor. God, and
you have no idea how bad I want to shave off Ken Ham's beard.
I've been thinking about that beard for the past like 5 minutes. That's all I can picture. When I think of Ken Ham, it immediately goes down to the chin. And I'm glad you were thinking the same thing. It's like a goatee. But unique.
Yeah, I want to shave his fucking chin pubes off.
Yeah, I was like, it's almost like pubic hair. It's very, yeah, I feel sorry for his wife if he hasn't. But I think I'm glad that
come on, they haven't slept in the same bed in 20 years. It doesn't matter.
True. But I thought that Christians had the better sex. Oh, wait, no, that was Ted Hager that said that.
Well, yeah, it's because he was in with a male prostitute. So
doing crack or something. Exactly. So I don't understand why he accepted this, because Bill Nye is extremely knowledgeable. And there's no doubt. I mean, he probably knows creationist arguments. I've seen him against Bill O'Reilly. And I think it's a good move on Bill's part. I don't know why Kim would ever accept it or actually promote it or, you know, go after it. I think it's a mistake on the creationist part. But Aaron Ross said that he thinks it's for raising money for the museum.
It is.
They're falling in profits.
All the money's going towards Answers in Genesis and Ken Ham. There hasn't been any talk about raising money for any group of people or anything. So it must be all internal.
That's the only, you know, questionable thing. Why would Bill accept it if he knew the money was going other places? But probably because he feels that it's worth it for him to be that scientist, that person that's publicly out there and easy to listen to be person that argues with Ken Ham, even if we don't get money.
He's going to the creationists, going to their field.
Yes.
He's going to their territory and taking the fight to them.
Yeah. And I feel like that he has to be confident. He has to think that whatever he's working for is worth it. Cause I mean, just to walk in that museum is enough. So knowing the money is going somewhere that's going to promote things that destroy the scientific community and eventually a lot of stuff, and just dealing with that in general. I think he's just trying to help the people that are actually going to be listening as creationists. That's how I
really think that he will be able to change the minds of at least a couple people in there, or at least to get them on a path. But I also think that Ken Ham is going to gish gallop like a motherfucker and just throw shit out there, and it's going to strengthen a lot of people's resolve also, because Bill just won't be able to have enough time to rebut everything.
Yeah, that's the one thing with the big name creationists, or the ones that are at least trained, because there can be just your neighbor can be well trained in creationism, and it's, they have so many things to say, all these little lies about carbon dating has been shown to be incorrect, so the age of the earth is wrong, and genetic mutations are all bad, and they'll have like 150 of these claims. And then add on top of that, evolutionists think that we came out of rocks and Hitler was an atheist, and they'll throw that on top of it. And
the evolutionists was a Catholic.
Yeah. And there's just so many lies that are, you don't have the time in your life to sit there and answer each one of them. And I think that even if Bill Nye actually answers the question or rebuts correctly, a creationist will usually divert and go, well, you see how he said that the animal was designed to fly? Design. Come on. Even evolutionists. And he'll just go off on something completely different, and he will not actually respond to it. And most people don't catch it because it's so smooth. It's a smooth transition because it's drama. You follow the drama, and the creationists are all drama.
Mm-hmm. And they ain't got nothing else.
That's all I can do.
It's all about pot shots.
Yes.
If you can poke enough holes, then the ignorant masses that follow them will think that you've got something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all their videos are. I watched the 8-hour lecture from Eric Hovind, or Eric or his dad. I don't remember. It was a little while ago because they're practically the same thing. And they were talking about how evolutionists think that birds came from dinosaurs. And I'm like, okay, what is he going to say like against it, so I can, you know, try to figure out, because I tried to answer the question to test myself, because that's my kind of game.
Oh, God. I have to draw this comparison. Have both of you seen 8 Mile?
With Eminem?
The Eminem movie, 8 Mile?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think I did.
Okay, well, in the movie, there's a scene where there's a rap battles up on stage, and Eminem versus X person. Mm-hmm. And everybody's, you know, they're rapping on one side, and everybody out in the audience is like, oh, ooh, oh. And it's just like that, back and forth with, you know, Eric or Kent or whoever else. You know, they're just trying to score points in the audience.
That's exactly what
mic drop.
Yeah, they become a comedy show. And like, I was waiting for some sort of like, but this fossil looks like a dinosaur and they say it's this. And so I could actually think about it. But all he said was he put a slide up on the projector and it had a bucket from KFC and it had a dinosaur in it. And he said, could you imagine instead of eating fried chicken, eating fried dinosaur? And the crowd burst out laughing.
You are eating fried dinosaur, motherfucker.
That was literally their rebuttal of dinosaurs becoming birds, because it would be ridiculous to eat fried dinosaur, guys.
That's just silly.
Crazy evolutionist. Yeah, it's a comedy show. It's an entertainment show. It's little jabs and it's the gotcha moments, and it's getting worse. The last video I watched of Eric Covid on the show, because they make me do it all the time, because he's rampant. He is rampant. His arguments are everywhere. It's a comedy hour. And
you know they're just doing that to make you watch that and torture yourself, pull your hair out.
Yeah, I usually have to watch it a couple times just because I want to make sure, as a science person, I literally don't want any part of his argument to not be addressed. He'll say five things wrong in one sentence. And I need to make sure I wrote all those things down. And where did he get this? He says that this fossil was found in two pieces 500,000 yards away, because one's on Mars and one was in Africa. And evolutionists think they're the same species, so obviously we're dumb. And I go, well, is that true? And then I have to look up and see if these things that he's heard are true. And if they're not, which they usually aren't, that means it's very hard to Google search, because you never can find it. And mm-hmm. So it takes me a lot of time to actually go through it all. And at the end of the day, I literally didn't teach anything. I didn't learn anything. And I just sat there and went, nope, that's wrong. It's a lie. That's wrong. It's a lie. That's wrong. That's a lie. Well. And it hurts our listeners. I know it does, but there's a reason why those are the only arguments that exist in a creationist, pool of questions. You sit down with one, they will say one of those arguments or one of those claims 100%. And you have to address them. I can't even remember the ones that he said on the last video, but they were so bad. Ray Comfort might be worse with his blog that evolutionists think fish flop out of water and gasp for air and then flop back in and eventually they develop lungs. Or sex.
I could see that happening.
Yeah, exactly. It totally can happen. Sex developed, evolutionists think that sex developed by a fish walking out of water, developing a bump, and then another fish walking out of water and developing a hole at the same time. And then they end up going, oh, we should put these together. And then that at the same time genetically allows them to reproduce in the same time period at the same place. And they fit together. And he sets that up very well. And it is dumb. Of course it's dumb, but it's ridiculous. And I mean, it's almost like a cartoon, a cartoon walking out of water and developing a bump. And then one walking out and developing a hole and going, hey, we should put these together and see what happens. And that's his evidence against evolution.
Wow.
It's exhausting.
It's completely absurd.
It's the Flintstones is what it is.
Mm-hmm. And I liked the Flintstones too.
I did too, until I got to be an adult.
Yeah, and I realized
this is pretty much Christian propaganda.
It's not only abuse of dinosaurs, but it's completely ridiculous. Why would you ever think that Homo sapien would have control over, you know, the tyrannosaurids? That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. It's just too much stuff to juggle. Mm-hmm. So that's why I just read normal evolution stuff instead of creationism all day. You just can't do it. And they haven't changed in 40 years, so there really is no material.
Yeah.
Except for genetic stuff. That's another story.
Do they have any counters to the genetic evidence?
The first thing they always do is change words and distort immediately what evolution, I don't even like the word evolutionists, people that accept evolution or understand it, they distort what those people actually think for the creationists. So they'll tell the creationists, well, this is what evolution people think, and this is ridiculous. And so it is always a ridiculous claim because they change the words completely. Mm-hmm. And they either change it to the point of breaking the argument in which mutations are always bad. So how could mutations ever, you know, drive evolution? So they changed the fact that mutation equals always a bad genetic change, which is completely wrong. And then they'll go, well, you know, evolution people say that DNA is a code. It's a book. Well, the only code maker we've ever known is God. We write code, but code can't write itself. Code can't assemble itself. A book can't assemble itself by, you know, a monkey smashing its face onto a keyboard. So it's evidence for design. So they're misusing the words that geneticists actually use as shortcuts. They'll say it's a code because they don't want to sit there and have to have the 5-minute explanation. And that's the one that annoys me the most because it's really pointless, but it's used a lot because, and I describe it in comparison to a creationist saying that, well, the periodic table, who makes tables? The only table makers we've ever known are people. So how can the periodic table have come about without a designer? Because tables require designers.
Oh, that's painful.
And you go, what? No, periodic table is a word because every freaking scientist doesn't want to label all of the elements whenever they are trying to describe the periodic table. It's a shortcut. It's a summary, and they misuse summaries constantly, which is what most of the genetic books are about. Designers being required for codes and them trying to change how mutations work is rampant. Mutations are bad. They leave 5 arms all the time. Or they change what information means, that information has to equal almost like a book. With words and sentences, the DNA is not information. It's just a string of amino acids. There's no sentences. There's no really words. And it's almost gibberish. It's just, it's chemical interactions. And, I think the main one is the mutation. That one always makes me mad that mutations can't drive evolution because they're always bad in that. And that we have never seen a genome increase or information increase. So how could evolution cause a fish to increase its information to become a human? And almost no one knows how to answer that question. Do y'all know the answer to that question?
Yeah, it has.
Exactly. There's 2 parts to it. There's like, yeah, they somehow make arguments that have like 5 different things wrong with it. But the main ones are that we have information increases all the time. And if you consider information to be a gene or, even a chromosome, chromosomes can get duplicated. They can get split and then cut and pasted on a different arm. A gene can duplicate itself. And then you, if you have 2 copies of it, you have a free copy to mess with and the other one's still functioning. So you can start tweaking it and then make a pancreatic enzyme that is an increase, not only in the genome, literally, but in a new enzyme, a new function. So we see it. So that's a lie. And also that assumes that Homo sapiens have constantly increased how long our DNA is to become a human. So everything below us, like primitive fish, things that are lesser, have less DNA code.
They have a shorter string.
Yeah, more equals better. And that's completely wrong.
We're obviously the top of the pyramid also.
Yeah, obviously, because we're better than everybody, top of that ladder. I mean, there's like yeast species that have longer DNA codes than we do.
We have the best eyes, the best ears, best nose, obviously.
Yeah, definitely. Best backs.
Oh, yeah. Hips.
Enamel. Yeah.
Yeah. Knees. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Knees are top notch.
Sinuses. Those are always really good. Not getting stuffed up at all. Nope. Birth problems. We're totally perfect. And it's because we have an increased genome more than everyone else. So they're both lies completely. Absolutely. Information is not.
The oldest argument is still the one that gives me the biggest chuckle or head shake is the whirlwind blowing through a garbage dump and making it 747.
I have not heard that one in a long time, but that was actually the first one I ever heard.
I mean, you don't see a 747 with extraneous parts.
Exactly. And though I don't hear that specific one anymore, I heard it from one of my first boyfriends who said that to me, and I had not studied evolution whatsoever. I was 17 and I heard that and I went, that's really dumb. Like, you seriously think that's how things evolve, just randomly picking stuff out and hoping it works? That's not the way it works. And I eventually turned him into a raging atheist after 2 years. But I actually probably did that several times. But I think that argument, I haven't heard it as much, is because it's morphed into what they try to make it appear as a different argument. It's randomness, it's chance, it's non-buildup of traits. And so they say that if you take a whole bunch of giraffes and then you randomly mutate them and you hope that eventually one of them is going to, you know, lose all of its spots and blend into the safari or something. But none of them, it's random. Mutations are actually random, and they actually don't even talk about it. They just say the evolution is random, just wrong. Mutation's random. But then natural selection, the selection pressures are not random. And so that's like the tornado. The tornado is a randomness of evolution, but evolution is mutation and selection. And so they've just morphed it and they've just slid it into almost all of their arguments, that it's random, that it can't make information, that it can't build, because they don't like to accept that natural selection is very good at being ordered. It's extremely good at it. And so that's pretty much the tornado argument in disguise, that it's, well, it's random. It can't, it's by chance. How could anything as complex as the eye rise by chance? Dang it. You get to sit here for 3 hours and talk about that now.
I've always liked, you know, I'll bring up another horseman. Dawkins talking about one of it, talking about a fish that has two pairs of eyes that are completely different. So, you know.
Oh, the one that has the fish that, the eyes that are actually in
the look cranium. Out, yeah, and a pair that look down.
It looks like a submarine. Yeah, it's craziness. There's so many of these amazing creatures. That's the kind of stuff I like to learn about. And
you got a fish that reinvented the eye when it didn't even need to.
Exactly. And then you have fish that get caught in cave systems and go completely blind, go albino, and it's completely obvious that animals adapt over time.
And there is extant species with every possible transitional step to the most complex eyes out there.
Yeah, yeah. There's things in the fossil record, and we can also, you know, find intermediate steps in things alive today. And I don't even, I actually got that question at a corporate dinner meeting. And it was really awkward because I didn't like to talk about evolution at the corporate with the presidents and, you know, get into an argument with a 45-year-old guy. And so I don't usually talk about it, but somebody has to ask, why do you go to school? Fossils and, you know, evolution and stuff. Oh crap, I shouldn't have said that word. And his face changes, and I'm assessing him, like, what kind of guy is this guy? Is he for evolution? Is he against it? Is he against it? And he's actually going to say something at the corporate dinner.
And is he packing a gun?
Yes. He's kind of
Texas.
He's kind of goofy and, like, you know, balding glasses, this little guy. So I was bigger than him. I probably could have taken him anyway. So my 5'10" self. But he immediately went, oh, well, I mean, I've been reading about, you know, evolution and stuff. And I think to myself, okay, what argument is he going to pull from the hat? Is it going to be the evolution of the eye? Is it going to be bacteria flagellum? Is it going to be randomness? Mutations can't happen. And he went, and I've been the bacteria flagellum. And he just kind of stops and realizes that a 22-year-old just said his word for him for his argument, in which he didn't know what he was talking about. And I was the nicest person ever. I was like, that's actually a really interesting subject. Actually, it's the type 2 and 3 secretory systems of bacteria. It's actually an injector. And so I'm acting all excited as if I'm not really showing him up. And he's just sitting there staring at me. And he tried one more time. He's like, well, I mean, the evolution of the eye is, it's real complex. I can't understand how that could have risen by chance. I'm like, oh, no, you did not.
Put your hand on his shoulder, just close your eyes and shake your head no really slowly, and then walk away.
Yeah, I was like, didn't I just prove to you that I'm not just a person that's going to be like, ooh, bacterial flagellum? What is that? That's a big word. And he continued at dinner. It was really rude. And I went, oh, the evolution thing, that's actually a good subject too. I've been studying that a lot, actually. And the intermediate forms. And I went off on this happy-go-lucky at pretending I wasn't completely destroying him at corporate dinner. And within 5 minutes, he was, oh, well, that's cool. Well, you know, good luck on your studies. Under the table, I'm like, yes! My boss, like, looks at me and gives me a thumbs up. And people, I mean, those are the arguments that come out of adults and kids.
Tell us about the dig that you're working on.
Yeah.
I started, my father actually was the one who found out about the site because I was still going to school and I was studying paleoanthropology, so human fossils, human like genetics, and I really loved how we came from primates. And so I literally had not studied dinosaurs whatsoever, but I love fossils. I had studied a lot of evolutionary points and knew all of these big names and I would throw them at people just to sound smart. And but I never thought that I could actually get my hands on real fossils, because in paleoanthropology, if you want to get, you know, your PhD, you want to write your dissertation, human evolution isn't in Texas. You can't just go down the road and try to find a human fossil, because hominids, if they're in Texas, then we have a problem, because we don't think they're supposed to be here. They're supposed to have evolved in Africa. So I would need to be excavating for months in, you know, Ethiopia, Kenya, Tanzania, and in these places that I don't want to really go. I don't have that drive to go find that one human skull. And so I really want to be that one, to be the person that heard about all the hard work and then could actually relay it to other people. I love to learn the big ideas and memorize the skulls and put the big picture together. And so I never thought I'd actually mess with fossils. And so my father found actually a flyer, because the Arlington Archosaur site, whenever it was discovered, six, 7, 8 years ago, it was found on accident, just how it always works, and just fossils sticking up out of the ground.
Really?
And so I think actually two different groups of people, completely not connected, were walking through the fields within a couple weeks of each other, mm-hmm. and both of them found exposed fossils.
Wow.
And so if the person that finds these actually understands, you know, hey, someone should check this out. I shouldn't just pick it out of the ground and take it home. We got lucky and both of those groups went to University of Texas in Arlington, and because they were in the Arlington area, and said, hey, can you get an excavation team out there? Can you, you know, survey and see if there's anything worthwhile in the field? Because this giant field, it literally is just a field with a hill. And it was going to be a housing project. They were going to demolish the whole thing the next year, and house is going to be built on top of it, and it would have been completely over. And so they sent Dr. Derek Main, a paleontologist and geologist there, and his original team of geology students up there. And, you know, they found a couple fossils, but it wasn't enough to get the money to run the site. They couldn't figure out a way to convince the company who owned the land to not build their houses to make a whole bunch of money because of a couple turtle fossils. Sure. So they didn't think it would work. And then one of the people that was on the team suggested that his friend bring their tractor and to pretty much move half of the hill and see if there's anything, you know, really obvious. And if there's not, then, you know, they'll shut it down. And the director was like, hell yeah, let's do it. Because he was, you know, like a punk, long hair. And he was, you know, the super cool guy. And his partner, like, absolutely not. No, absolutely not. That will destroy the specimens. And they decided not to. But the guy with the tractor didn't get the memo. And the tractor moved half of a hill. And they found a whole entire crocodile nursery, 100-million-year-old crocodiliform nursery with eggs, with jaws.
Wow.
And they found shattered turtle shells. They found all, it was just like laid out right where the tractor had pulverized this part. And then they realized that there was the actual nursery, the baby nursery, was under the guy's truck. She was like parked on top of a 100-million-year-old baby crocodiliform nursery. And, it was such a big, it was so clumped together, which is the big amazing part about the site is not one fossil. It is literally
like a nursery.
It's not even just a nursery. Like the nursery was just one part of it. Cause there was the nursery under the truck, which they excavated that year. And then if you walk 5 feet towards the hill, you get to a different area where there's a lot of turtle. And then if you walk like 10 feet the other way, you get to the hadrosaur area. And if you walk that way, you'll get to the part where there's, like shark teeth and garfish.
Is this all in the same depth or like different layers?
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's all in about 97 million years. And so we have,
wow.
And what was so cool is that they're like, wow, we not only have so many fossils close to each other, but there's now different pieces being shown here. There's land, which is a hadrosaur. It's it pretty much eats plants. It's like the cow of the dinosaurs. It has like a little duck bill, a long tail, and little baby hands, and it pretty much ate trees. But it's the main dinosaur there, the hadrosaurs. And so that's obviously a land animal. And we have turtles, and we have the crocodiliforms, which are pre-crocodiles. They're the ancestors. And those are animals that usually are living in the river systems and the swamps. They don't live in the oceans. You don't see crocodiles in the oceans. And so we have a river system, a land system, and then probably 100 feet out, it connects out to the ocean because we see shark teeth and we see fish teeth and we see all sorts of stuff. And so they figured out that this right in the middle of DFW is 100 million years ago, pretty much like the deltas of Louisiana, because the earth was a lot hotter and the oceans were higher. And so there's actually a picture of the ocean. It was raised up and like half of the United States cut in half was covered in water. And that was including half of Texas. And we literally on the edge of this border of this risen sea and swamp system that's in DFW. So we have crocodiles and sharks and turtles and hadrosaurs in this wet, swampy, connected to the ocean river system. And so we have all three places in one field practically. Wow. And everything is just preserved beautifully because fossils love to be preserved in water. And the coolest thing and maybe the biggest pain in the ass thing about the site is that since it is a river system, things get washed down rivers. So whenever something dies or it gets the picture of the crocodile, waiting for the bison to drink the water, and it comes out and it twists it apart and it gulps the whole thing down, or it gets ripped apart by three other ones. They actually probably fed the same way, which is what we did the dissertation on. Cause we found fossils with tooth marks on them. For big dinosaurs have giant crocodiliform tooth marks on the bones. And, but these bones are disarticulated. They are spread out. There you'll find the rib over there and the jaw, like 10 of them over there, because it literally is jumbled.
So you're finding what you would expect to find.
Absolutely. Everything makes perfect sense. And the crocodile nursery is right next to it, which would have been in the river system on the shores. We find the crocodiles. We find the jaws. We find turtle shells are everywhere. Every day I found a piece of a turtle shell. Because if you picture a giant tortoise or a turtle getting eaten, which these crocodiles forms were very specialized at capturing and popping open these things. It felt really bad because these things were massacred in this area. And their shells are not just one piece. They're little puzzle pieces. And so whenever it gets eaten, it explodes. And all of its shells go everywhere. So one turtle equals 300 pieces of shell. And the shells are like every 10 minutes, I clink something up. Well, I wonder what it is. I wonder if it's... Oh, it's a turtle shell. Dang it. But it's a 97-million-year-old turtle shell that probably has crocodile teeth marks on it.
Vaguely reminds me about the area around here, because we have to worry every once in a while if you're walking on the beach. Seagulls or birds will like get clams or something, fly them up in the air and drop them. So we have to, every once in a while, we have to kind of watch out for, falling shells.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, when it comes to like these little pieces of shells of like turtle shells of clams, they're very different from bones in the way that they act after death and how they get separated, because they don't get digested. And so they are literally everywhere and they fossilize really, really, really well. And so we find, you know, clams and stuff as well, which one of the other assistants works with, because it kind of bores me to do that kind of stuff.
Ooh, but have you found any crocodile farm poos with turtle shells in
it? We find coprolites constantly. Mm-hmm. And yes, we've been able to analyze the coprolites. So see, actually, one of the coolest things, I actually found it. I call it a lemur fossil. And it was one of the last ones I found. Probably it was last season before we had to close for winter. I clanked something. I picked with the tooth picks and all sorts of stuff for several hours, and I couldn't find a form. I couldn't figure out what it was. It was like the size of, I can't even describe, like maybe if you clumped like four shirts together, it's like just a jumbled mess of non-form, but it's all solid, which is not a bone. And so I'm like, what the heck is this thing? And no one knew what it was. And then I found a piece of a limb bone, like the end of it sticking out on one end. And I went, oh, what is that, a hadrosaur limb bone? Wow. Okay. And I couldn't find the end of it. And then on the other side, I found another piece of the limb bone. And I'm like, and then there's like four ribs sticking out of it. And, but they're all connected. I'm like, what on earth is this? Is this a tumor? Like, why? What is going on? So I called it the tumor fossil. And no one really understood what it was, because it came out in this giant clump of just mass bones just stuck together. And they took it to the lab and they had to go through it. And they found out that, although it wasn't coprolite, but it was regurgitation. And it either literally vomited, but they think that the crocodile form ate this and was fossilized, and that's its stomach contents just sitting there. And so I found a 97-million-year-old crocodile vomit with giant hadrosaur bones sticking out of it. Wow. So that's enough evidence to show that they ate them. But we find coprolites every time, 10 to 15 a day. I give them to all my friends. this is my first gift they gave. I was like, I brought y'all fossils. And they're like, oh, really? This is a coprolite. Wow, what's a coprolite? And they're like looking at it. I'm like, it's dinosaur shit. And they just stop. Like, what? What, you? No, it's a rock, dude.
No,
chill
I
out.
Want so bad.
I have several of them, so I can chip you one for a small fee.
Will you please?
I'm just kidding. No, I don't sell them. I don't sell them at all. But the main thing about the site is that there's so many fossils, it almost gets annoying, because people would get annoyed at me, and I get annoyed at myself, because I was known as the person that kept finding. I found something every day that I was there, and most of the time I'd find multiples. And so you're there for 9 hours sitting bent on the side of a hill with a dentist pick in the sun, and though you love what you're doing and it's thrilling and it's meaningful whenever it's 4 o'clock and you usually at 5, and then you clank something and you realize that you think it's a piece of a skull. And that means it's probably deeper, which probably means it's in something called the chocolate layer, which means it's like shaving chocolate. It's so thick. And that means I'll be there for another 4 hours. And so I'd find fossils, and then I'd look around. I found something. Dang it, Rachel! I wanted to go home! Almost every time. And so I ended up like hiding fossils sometimes. I'm like, oh shit, it's a fossil. Fuck. I did not find that. I want to go home. Jeez, because there's literally so many. If volunteers find stuff every day,
put a little dirt back on top of it, then a little colored marble.
I mark it for tomorrow.
Then you find one at the start of shift.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong. As long as it doesn't rain, that's fine. It's a fun experience. And for a long time, we let the public come. We train them. My friends could come sit next to me. I'd train them how to, my boyfriend found stuff. My dad found stuff. Everyone usually finds stuff on their first try, at least turtle shell or ancient trees. And it's a really good experience to show that fossils are not just, bones that are stuck together with glue by these old scientists that live high up in a university, disconnected from everyone, and they make up everything.
In their ivory towers.
Exactly. That they make it up that they're far away, they're in China or something. They're actually everywhere. And you can find them, and the devil did not put them there. Because you found that. Did the devil literally put that rib in there this morning? You please tell me that to my face. And I've gotten told that once. The devil most likely put them there. And I offered for him to come to the site with me and see how well the devil buried the fossils, but he never came. So,
were you part of the SSA?
I was. That's how I got into the Texas Free Thought Convention. Yep. Nice. I'm still part. I'm part of the Speakers Bureau for Texas.
You want to tell people about the SSA, what it is, what it does, why they should join if they're in school?
They are an important group, and they're growing so freaking fast. And it's pretty much, it's a group to help young adults in going through the educational system that are like high school and college. And they're trying to promote scientific reason and, you know, and secularism, but they're doing this through the fact that when you go to a high school, you go to a college, especially high school, you know, what clubs are there? Well, what, you know, posters on the wall, what activities are there? They're usually Christian clubs, you know, meet at the flag, et cetera. And a lot of the times whenever an atheist actually tries to go to the administration to get an atheist group, especially in high school, registered, because they, you know, atheists would like a support group too to talk to their friends. You know, ridiculous, right? I mean, only mm-hmm. Christians can do that. And they're being shut down and then being hush-hush about it. No one is throwing in, you know, a fit, like a Christian group that found out that a high school club couldn't meet after school to pray would be on Bill O'Reilly within like 15 seconds. Mm-hmm. And no one was supporting these young adults who needed guidance and they needed a community, because we all like community. That's what we all kind of miss from church most of the time. And they try their best with the high schoolers because they're a little bit more strict with high school to try to set up these clubs, give them support. But with colleges, I was a part of the college group, and they work with the atheist groups or the free thought groups, the science groups in colleges to pretty much give them support, give them what they need whenever they, you know, are treated unfairly, are needing, activism support, are needing speakers, it's pretty much everything a club needs to do and should have, and that Christian groups do have. They have the support. And that atheist groups never had. And they're fighting for the rights for these young adults to have these groups and be able to have a resource somewhere. And I mean, they've grown. And so I was in actually two atheist groups, because a lot of colleges don't even have an atheist group because it's highly unpopular to call, you know, oh, hey, this is the university's atheist group. And they had to hide under different names because even and, so then they started doing a actual secular student alliance clubs and groups. And so, is given materials, is given promotion, you know, if possibly funding, depending on what they're doing, you know, advice, et cetera. And you would be able to consider yourself to be a part of this main global, not global, I think they're in most states. I think they are. And if not, it's growing very quickly. I think,
and there's some in Canada too.
Have they really gotten to Canada? Wow,
so.
Really? That's amazing. Because I think maybe Oklahoma. I'm not. There was one state not long ago that just got their very first out atheist club at a high university, because it was a Christian university, I believe. Actually, no, was it in Texas? Wait a minute.
Yeah,
it might have been TCU. TCU might have gotten its first atheist club through the support of the SSA.
Secular and Student Alliance definitely has Canada, about 10 of them.
That's amazing. That's amazing. They are really helping people, you know, not feel isolated, because we, you know, often do feel that way whenever we have to interact with the public and get support for the fact that we're atheists, and we need, you know, to see other people feel the same, or, you know, even to help other people realize that science is the way, that's the rational way to do it.
It's just nice to not feel alone.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's a lot of, popular Republican / Christians kind of the same a lot of the times around here. They'll talk trash about the Secular Student Alliance, saying they're promoting, you know, not having morals. They're promoting, you know, removing God from existence, and that they hate God, and that they're attacking the university, and they're attacking the Christian students. And it's absolutely ridiculous, because this is the most supportive group I've ever seen for college groups. They do is support. They don't they don't attack other people.
Right.
And they've grown fast because of it. They've apparently grown faster than, I think, Christian groups in universities. What, 2 years ago when I saw that presentation, that they've outgrown Christian groups, though Christians have grown more groups.
Mm-hmm.
Percentage-wise, SSA has destroyed them because people need the support. And that's how I got into that Texas Freethought Convention, because I couldn't afford $200. And I got part of the SSA. I signed up for the Texas Freethought. They also go to most conventions to allow college students to be able to get in for a good price. And I got to interact with Richard Dawkins, because he agreed with the SSA to talk to college students. It's extremely helpful. I have nothing negative to say about it.
Awesome.
At all. Which usually I have something to say negative about everything. But they are, and they get with the local people. One of my good friends became the Texas representative for the SSA here, and they're just very interactive and helpful. And that's all I could say about them. I could be wrong on all of that. I don't work for them. It could actually be a group for Scientology.
Wait, what?
No, it's not. It's not a group for Scientology, I promise.
L. Ron Hubbard's grandson or great-grandson just came out recently saying that L. Ron Hubbard was saying basically that this was complete bullshit, Scientology?
That does not surprise me. I thought I heard the actual author said, no, I just wrote this story. He didn't understand why people were taking it so critically, or not critically, so literally as a religion.
Well, it's all based on Dianetics, which was a science fiction book.
Yes, I went to the Scientology Museum when I went to Washington 2 years ago for the first time. And I went to go see the Smithsonian, and it was the best time of my life. They practically had to kick me out. And then we stopped by the Scientology Museum, or Scientology Building, because they had a giant sign 3 stories high of, please come in and see what Scientology is all about, free tour and all this stuff. You know what? I want to go get my feet in this measure. Let's go. And we went in, and it was literally 5 rooms, the whole bunch of his books, with some interactive videos about how he's such an amazing man and he did all these nice things. And if you feel like you are sad, then you should get that book by him. And if you feel like this, then you should get that book. And at the end of the tour, you can talk to a special, agent. They're all dressed the same. Very, very sweet people. And you can go into a private room with them and pay, I think it was $150, and you will sit down with the E machine and you will get your thetans measured, and you will get an evaluation and counseling by Scientologists. And I just got to glance into that room for a second, and I saw a person sitting down in front of a thing that looked like it was recording equipment from the 1970s with little electric connectors. And that's all I got to see. And
wow.
And I walked out. I was like, wow, so was that religion about the author? Am I worshiping him? Or... No, because they don't even talk about the religion. It's ridiculous.
I mean, they do talk about him in like a great leader sort of way, but most of the high up stuff is just kind of hidden behind money. You have to pay for the higher levels of courses before they tell you all the crazy shit. You're more likely to believe it since you've invested all this time and money into it.
Exactly. Yeah. I wanted to see if they would actually even have a piece of their religion, anything about the Thetans, anything about Xenu and volcanoes and people being dumped in them, the souls floating in people's bodies, or, trillions of years galaxy. And nothing was mentioned about the actual religion, just how awesome Alan Hubbard was.
Well, South Park got it pretty right. From what I know.
Yeah.
They are really good at describing religions. Very, very good. To the point where we're like, oh, it's just South Park. It's dramatic. Wait. No, that was 100% accurate. Wow. That's extremely sad.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an obvious money scam. You couldn't leave the place without buying a book, without signing up for a subscription, without getting your thetans measured, without going through counseling.
Oh, no. Wouldn't it have been so much fun to take Ken Ham's and Hovind's and everybody else's address down there and just sign them up for that shit?
That would have been amazing. amazing. But the only reason I would never have done that is because those people in the building were so sweet. They were just so sincere. And I know that they've been trained highly because people are so, you know, critical of Scientology. They think it's dumb. They ridicule them. So they have this appearance of just being so nice and clean cut and helpful. No one wants to be mean to them. I couldn't be mean. I lost my whole entire humor as soon as the person walked up to me. It's like, shit, now I can't giggle the whole time.
Well, Mormons have that that same kind of nice, happy, overly happy facade now. But remember that not too long ago, they had death squads. Like,
they did.
Armies. Really? Yeah. So.
And how long ago did they have death squads?
Well, 130 years
like
or
when,
so.
What's that?
I mean, it's not
when they, when they had a territory.
Yeah.
Utah?
When yeah. Smith was still alive, he was having people killed.
That's right. I think I kind of remember that now. Yeah, they were practically trying to control the territory and, you know, actually spread the religion in the way that almost every religion tries to spread by killing everyone else who doesn't agree or scaring them into saying they agree. And the only reason it didn't hold is because it happened recently and we can go, that is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. It's a new religion. Obviously, this is made up, but Jesus.
It's an ascertainable history.
Yeah.
Yeah, magic hats and
necromancy.
That stuff's crazy, but you know,
virgin births
make complete sense because babies can be born with only 50% genetic information. Makes sense to me.
I've seen Star Wars. I know it can happen. There is such a thing as a virgins. Okay, get over it. Jesus, real.
That is such strong evidence. I just can't. You're right. I fall. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you can never argue with Star Wars.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Not, you can't argue with the first three very much.
Wait, the first three or the first three?
I watched those in 2020, sadly.
Wow.
But I liked them when I watched them.
Okay.
They were good. But I missed out on the time of nostalgia when you got to watch it, and no matter what, it's awesome. Like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I love that movie.
What about Bogus Journey?
Yeah, I love both of them.
All right.
Yeah, they're awesome, but they're not. At all. It's nostalgia. It's confusing me. But, it's a strong, that's why people are creationists. They want to keep believing it.
All right. Well, I think we're about out of time. Thank you very much for joining us.
Having me on. And,
go have fun with your Minecraft.
People contact y'all and we're like, hey, ask her this shit. And just forward me the question.
Cool. Will do.
And we'll link to Dogma in the show notes. And is there any other website that you want us to link to? Any other stuff?
No, because Dogma Debate has a tab on it that says Evolution. That's my blog and stuff.
Okay. Oh, sweet.
And it's got my Twitter and all that stuff on my
stuff. Awesome. Thanks, lady.
Awesome.
This has been fun.
Thank you.
Yeah. Y'all have a good one.
All right.
Don't get too drunk.
No. My cat's tipped over the beer. That's why I had to get up and wipe it all up.
That's unfortunate.
It was. For cats.
I just got killed by a zombie. I'm going to leave.
Minecraft.
I'd hang up on you, but my hand's on the controller and I can't hold my phone.
Alrighty, have a good evening. I will hang up.
Bye,
thank
guys.
You.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find us online at www.atheistnomads.com, contact us at contact@atheistnomads.com, or leave us a voicemail message at 541-203-0666. You can also like us on Facebook or leave us a review on iTunes, Zoom, or wherever else you find the podcast. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.
Let's go back to me being an actual, like, adult.
I would so be happy if Texas just left.
No. Texas does not need to leave. Texas needs to have a very specific group of people that somehow are so loud, even though they're tiny, they're getting shit done, making the rest of us look stupid. They need to be removed
job.
And sent to freaking Titan by... you know, freaking Saturn. Actually, no, don't ruin Titan.
Yeah, there might actually be life on Titan.
I can go hang out in the asteroid belt. I don't care.
Yeah, sure. Hmm.
I just, they're just loud. They're really loud. And I think that makes it look like they're representing a lot of us.